The following live presentation by Rabbi David Aaron is brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To learn more about Israelite, please visit our website at www.israelite.org. Additional contact information is available at the end of this presentation. Thank you for learning with Israelite and enjoy the experience.
If I were to sum up Judaism in just a few words, I would say that only love is real. The goal of Jewish life and all its laws are to empower us to love each other and to love God and receive God's love in our lives. That's what it's all about. And we've learned until now that in the beginning all of existence was endless light, and that this endless light, again, is a metaphor for the endless presence of God. However, the Kabbalah teaches us that, so to speak, the nature of this light or the nature of this presence is absolute oneness. And we had discussed that this oneness is not like the one in our dictionary, which is the opposite of many, but rather a mysterious oneness, a miraculous oneness that includes multiplicity while remaining one. And in fact, really, this oneness is the miracle of love. Love is a oneness that unites, includes, respects diversity, and yet somehow there is one in the many and many in the one. And perhaps in English, the oneness that Judaism is referring to would perhaps be better referred to as non-duality. Non-duality. The Kabbalah teaches that in the beginning all of existence was endless light, endless love. But how is love manifest? By making a space in your life for someone other than yourself. So the Kabbalah teaches that God removed his light from the center and created a space. Within this space, God created vessels which were very other than the light, gave over a thin ray of this endless light, this endless love, to the vessels, but the vessels were not ready or able to take this light, and they broke down. And the continuation of the story, according to Kabbalah, the story of our lives, the story of the life of the universe, the story of all mankind, is all about tikkun, how to mend the vessels in a manner that they will be able to be receptive to that light. And really, so far, we've really clarified that this entire story is about love. That the first step in true love is making a space for someone other than yourself. In the Kabbalistic story, the light, so to speak, is making space. God, actually, is making space for vessels which are other than the light. In addition, we see that these vessels are flawed because they're not able to receive the light. So love is not only making space for someone other than yourself, but making space for someone who is flawed, for someone who is imperfect. And when the vessels break, everything goes into chaos. And where is all this chaos happening? Within the loving space that God has created. And so we see that love is the art of making space for someone other than yourself, someone who is flawed, and someone who will cause breakdowns, someone who will generate chaos. That's true love. As I've mentioned before, the universe is a manifestation of unconditional love. And unconditional love could not be manifest unless the conditions were against love. Because if conditions were for love, that would not be the demonstration of unconditional love. If I get along with my husband or my wife really well, and there's absolutely nothing about them that annoys me or challenges me, nothing they ever do that bothers me, then when do I get a chance to really express the beauty of unconditional love. And therefore, it's precisely within this space where there is this chaos where the light of love becomes most manifest. So let's go through this kind of systematically. I want to deeper explore the meaning of making a space in your life for someone other than yourself. Because that's really the challenge in all relationships, not just a marital relationship. It's the same challenge we have in our relationship with our colleagues at work or other family members. The dynamics of love are the same in all forms of love. There obviously are nuances, but the fundamental principles are the same. The first step in a truly loving relationship is to create space for someone who is other than yourself. Now, in the female-male situation, the otherness is gender. The first thing is to create a space in your life for someone who is of the opposite sex. And that already is a miracle, that two people who are of the opposite sex really get along. Now, in Jewish tradition, we are taught that men and women are equal. Men and women are of equal value to God. Men and women have equal potential to be in service of God. And men and women are of equal ability to find total fulfillment in their lives. Equal. But Judaism does qualify that they are equal, but they are different. Right? And in fact, not only different, they are opposites. And it's really in that opposite where the fulfillment of love happens, that somehow two opposites can join in a oneness. So the first kind of space we need to make is make a space for someone who is other than ourselves, other in gender. But not only that, besides the gender challenge, whereby men and women think very differently and have very different strengths and very different orientations to life. Again, not better or worse, but equally important, but definitely different. We need to make a space in our life for someone who is other than our own personality. Because there's nobody at all in the world that's like you or me. Nobody. No two people alike. Just as our fingerprint is absolutely unique, so too our personality is absolutely unique. We are created in the image of God, which is the image of absolute uniqueness. And, my wife was very involved in astrology for many years. And, one of her challenges with astrology was an idea called astrological twins. I actually saw a book with pictures of astrological twins, which means that these are people who are not in any way related through family, no blood relationship, but they were born at the same time in the same place. Not necessarily the exact same room, but the same vicinity. Astrologically, these two people would have the same map. And therefore, my wife wondered, well, so then, are these people the same? They have the exact same personality based on astrology. So her astrology teacher told her that you have to understand astrology is only talking about a person's personality, but not their soul. In other words, they might have the same personality or character traits, but because they are not the same soul, and as a soul they have free choice, they can freely choose to do whatever they want to do with these character traits. So imagine you've got three children and they've all been given five crayons of the exact same color. Well, they're not going to come up with the same picture, because what they do with those colors is totally free. And therefore, even though there are similarities in personality and there are certain archetypical personalities, no two people are alike. And that becomes a huge challenge in a loving relationship, to create a space in our lives for someone who is very different than myself. I mean, I remember when I met my wife, In the first dates that we went on, I was quite shocked how similar we were. So much we agreed upon, so much we shared. Only later did I see how incredibly different we are. And we are. People are incredibly different. And we need to be able to truly love another person. We need to be able to make space in our life for someone other than ourselves. We need to make a space in our lives for someone who is other than our dreams, our projections, our expectations. This is very, very common that, in dating, but it's common in life in general that we project on people expectations. The expectations we have of ourselves, we somehow project on others. And therefore, we're not really loving them because we're not creating a space in our life for them, for who they are, rather than who we want them to be. This becomes a great challenge with raising our children. You know, the concept of he's a chip off the old block is not correct. No child is a chip off an old block, right? Every child is completely, completely different. Every child is a world. You know, in Jewish tradition, if you save the life of one person, you've saved a world. Because this person is a world unto themselves. There is absolutely no one like them. And when that person leaves the world, then there is a color, so to speak, a masterpiece, a completely rare and never repeatable masterpiece that is gone. And it's important to understand that that's what it means to really love our children. You know, they say this cute little story about a Jewish grandmother, and she's carting her two grandchildren. So she meets a friend, and her friend says, "Oh, Mrs. Stein, how old are your grandchildren?" She says, "Well, the doctor's 4, and the dentist is 5. I mean, you know, it's just a little joke, but the idea that we kind of project on our children and we have these formulations of who they are going to be. True love means creating a space in our lives for the uniqueness of this child. It says in our Judaism teaches that you have to teach the lad according to his or her way. Each child has a way. And if we really want to love our children or love our spouses, we need to recognize that love means making a space in your life for someone who is very, very other. And we need to make a space in our life for someone who's not only other than what we expect or project or dream about, but create a space in our life for someone who is other than anyone else we have ever experienced. We tend to understand things based on our understanding of other things. For instance, nobody can really imagine something completely new. If we try to be creative, we'll imagine perhaps a being that has the nose of a horse, but perhaps the wings of an eagle, and perhaps the feet of a man. But nonetheless, whatever we come up with will not be totally unique, because the truth is that we are coming up with a unique combination of things that are totally familiar. Well, but that's not the case with people, because we're not trying to create people. We can't create something completely unique, but God does. With every single human being that comes in the world, each and every one of us is a masterpiece. A piece of the master, a piece of absolute uniqueness. And therefore, it's so important that we meet people with a total freshness. We meet people and we create a space in our lives, and again, we do not understand them based on comparing them to anybody else. The worst thing you could do to a child, or to anybody, your husband, your wife, is to compare them to other people. They are who they are, and you should make a space in your life for who they are and never compare them to anybody else. In addition, we have to make space in our lives for a person who is other than any category of people that we've ever met. You know, it's like we meet someone and they're a doctor and immediately we label them, oh, doctors. You know, there's a joke that says 99% of all the lawyers give the other ones a bad name. You know, I mean, it's those kind of jokes that are, you know, inappropriate, but I'm allowed to say them. But again, we project, we meet people, we put them into boxes, into categories. We don't love them because we're not connected to who they are in their uniqueness. We're not creating a space, a complete opening. And that's real love takes tremendous openness. Openness to the uniqueness of this person. This person is not like any other category of people. I might have shared with you a story where a friend of mine was visiting in Jerusalem, and he was a elderly single fellow, very much wanted to get married, and he told me that one of the reasons he came to Israel was that there's a conference, an international conference for singles. He had kind of like, I guess, exhausted his possibilities in the United States, so decided to go look in the international world. Anyway, so he knew that I was always very interested in helping singles out. It's, as I think some of you might know, my little hobby is matchmaking. And so I said, could I join you at this conference? And he said, sure. So we went to the hotel where it was being housed. It was the King's Hotel in Jerusalem. We got into the lobby, and he wasn't quite sure if it was the King's Hotel or the King David Hotel where this conference was. So he approached a woman there who looked like she was perhaps in her 40s. He says to her, excuse me, is this where the International Conference for Singles is being held? So she looks at him and with disgust says to him, well, you're late. He said, well, what do you mean I'm late? I didn't know exactly where it is, and I wasn't quite sure when it was beginning. She said to him, if you really cared about getting married, then you'd find these things out. So she starts, you know, dumping on this guy, who really, strangely enough, I mean, he could have been a eligible bachelor for her, but already I saw that these two people were not meeting, rather she was meeting one of the representatives of the male species, who she obviously had much contempt for over these many years, I guess, of much rejection, and the poor fellow was getting the blunt of her anger towards all men. And he wasn't so much better because he wasn't able to really gracefully move out of the conflict. He moved right into it and started bashing her back. And I saw that these two individuals were not operating in a loving way and are not going to be able to create the space you need for your soulmate to come into your life. Because to create the space you need for your soulmate to come in your life, whether you have your soulmate already or not, because your soulmate needs to come into your life every day, even if you're married to them, you need to create that open, loving space where that person can feel supported in who they are, feel open that they can be who they are, and feel that they are not constantly being criticized and judged for who they are. To create this space, to create this boundary, it takes a real gentleness of overcoming the desire to critique and to judge. Because again, we critique and judge people very often based on our standards or based on our comparisons to other people or to what we expected or what we dreamed upon. We also need to create a space in our life for someone who is other than our parents. Because this is a common thing that people project. They project their stuff with their parents on their spouse or on their children or on other people. You know, they God forbid, but they might have had abusive parents, and therefore they assume that people are abusive. They might have parents who were not trusting parents, or parents they felt they could trust. And therefore, of course, they unfortunately grow up with a very intense distrust for people. But again, to create that loving space for your children or your spouse to be in your life, you've got to let go of your parents, somewhat psychologically. In fact, it's actually a verse in the Torah that says that a man shall leave his mother and father and cleave to his wife, and they shall be one flesh. How does he become one flesh? He's got to leave his mother and father. That doesn't mean he isn't honorable to his mother and father. It doesn't mean he doesn't help his mother and father. But there's a certain psychological break that he has to do to leave his mother and father. And I believe it's not only just a psychological need to break from mother and father in terms of independence, but in terms of projecting on his wife. If you're going to cleave to your wife, to who she is, well then don't go looking for your mother and father in her, or don't go looking to project your mother and father on her or him. And that's a big thing, you know. There is a very interesting fellow by the name of Harville Hendrix who wrote a book, became a best-selling book called Getting the Love You Want. And Harville has a very interesting theory, which makes sense to me, and I find it does have I would say some support in from the Jewish perspective, and this is really his idea. He developed something called imago therapy. I have some friends who have been involved with imago therapy, and I've heard some very good results from it. I have two friends who are actually imago therapists, and they are definitely sold on the approach. But one of the basic principles of imago therapy is, imago comes from the word image, and that essentially as we're growing up, we create, I as a man, create the image of a woman. The archetypical woman is the female caretaker in my life. It could be my mother, but it could be my sister, or it could be a combination. I also have an imago of a man. What is my archetypical understanding of what male is? And so two women have the same thing. It's generally it's based on whoever was the prime caretaker in your life. What then happens is, his theory is, how is it that people fall in love? How is it that two people are at a bar and they just kind of like exchange glances, and suddenly there is this immediate sense of connectivity, this incredible magnetic draw, and a sense of familiarity that transcends the amount of time we even have spent together. Within 5 minutes, we feel what we've known each other for years. So Harville's theory is that what happened was there was a connection with the imago, that this person reminds you of your imago, your male or female imago. It reminds you of your female or male archetype. And you are immediately attracted to that person. Now, that would all be fun and dandy. The problem is that you also are attracted to their negative traits, because the imago is not just the archetype male positive traits, but the archetype male positive and negative traits. And therefore, it is very, very common that people marry people who have the same negative traits as their parents. And when they discover this, and sometimes it's later on when they're already married, they are devastated. They cannot believe the irony. How could this be? Everything I was running away from my mother and father, I have run into my husband or my wife. So Harville explains that there is really some deep inner subconscious desire to fix our mothers and fathers through our relationship with our husband and wife. Now, this is actually where I feel Judaism does kick in, Because Judaism does believe, as we've studied until now, that it's all about fixing, right? It's all about how can we, mend? How can we bring harmony to our lives? How can we take the darkness and turn it into light? And therefore, you know, to love another person, you have to create a space in your life for someone other than what you are familiar with. Because one of the things you need to understand is, but this person is not your mother, and they're not your father. And they couldn't be exactly like your mother and father, because there's no two people that are alike. And therefore, part of the process of really, and this is not Harville speaking, this is David Aaron speaking, part of the process of love, the first step, the critical step, is creating that loving, open space. That non-critical, non-judgmental, accepting space. That ability to objectively see and respect this person for who they are. And if they have negative traits that, of course, you can't respect, well, then accept it, but this is who they are. And hopefully you can gently nurture them and they can gently nurture you, because nobody's perfect. Not only do you have to create a space for someone who is not familiar to us, because and in their genuineness, but we need to create a space in our lives for someone who is other than they were yesterday. That's what it really means to love, because it's about forgiveness. See, what happens in that loving paradigm is we make a space for a person, but then they do something bad and we close down. And we have to, once again, open our hearts and open our minds and open our lives to this person and be willing to forgive. Be willing to say who they acted yesterday is not who they act today. Because we are not our actions. Our actions are not who we are. There are people who are what they are, and yet we do stray. Judaism teaches us that the soul is only good. But why then do human beings do bad? Because we are alienated from our inner selves. But it's important to understand the power of forgiveness. I don't know if I shared this story with you. I was working with a couple that were in their late 70s. And we were learning Torah and Kabbalah. And one day the fellow takes me aside and tells me, you know, Rabbi, you know what bugs me about my wife? Well, I really wasn't interested, but before I had a chance to stop him, he already tells me, she doesn't know how to forgive. She does not know how to forgive. And he begins to tell me a story. I asked him, when did this happen? 30 years ago. Because imagine, this is the story he tells me, 30 years ago. Because of the 30 years ago, she does not know how to forgive. He has already labeled his wife. He has already created her in this image. She is not alive. She is a sculpted bust made of clay, you know? All right, well, later on, you know, the woman later on takes me aside. She says, you know, Rabbi, you know what bugs me about my husband? Of course, I did not want to know, but I could not stop her. She already tells me he does not know how to ask forgiveness. He does not know how to apologize. And she begins to tell me a story that also happened 30 years ago. And I thought, like, isn't it amazing how these two people for 30 years have been holding this anger, holding this story, and seeing each other in the light of this story, and not seeing each other because of the darkness of this story. If they looked at each other in the light of the moment, they should be able to get past this. They should work through this. They should forgive each other. You know, one of the best advices I got when I got married was my wife and I, was the day after our wedding, and we were floating down the street, two lovebirds, and we meet a fellow who says to us, oh, I'm sorry, I wasn't able to make it to your wedding. We had no clue who he was, so we were happy he wasn't there. But he said, well, let me give you some advice. And like, okay. And he said, whatever you do, never, ever let an argument or a conflict get past the night. swear to each other that you will always work things out before you go to sleep, but never go to sleep with hard feelings or anger or negativity or hurt towards each other. You've got to work it out. Of course, we were pretty shocked. I mean, you know, two lovebirds flying down the street. Wow, how cynical of a man to share this kind of advice. I mean, we would never argue. What is he talking about? I want you to know that this has been one of the absolutes of our marriage, that we don't let negative stuff get past the evening. Now that means you might be up till 2, 3 in the morning, which is a real help, because at a certain point you're so exhausted, you say, you know what, we gotta get through this, because we'll be exhausted the next day. But you know, you just create that new opening every day for the love for each other. But if you let the debts turn over into the, carry over into the next day, you just can't open your heart to that person for who they are right now. Torah teaches us that we are created and recreated anew every single day. So love means creating a space in your life, moving yourself out of the center, creating a space in your life for someone who is other than yourself. Other in gender, other in personality, other than your dreams, your projections, your expectations, other than any other category of people you've met, other than anyone else you've ever met, other than your parents, and other than who you've ever been familiar with, and other than even who your spouse might have acted as yesterday. Love is making space in your life. Your soulmate needs to be your roommate. And in order for your soulmate to be your roommate, you got to be able to make room in your heart, in your mind, for their otherness, for their uniqueness.
Well, I mean, how do you actually, in a practical manner, you know, forgive?
You just do.
You just do.
That's the problem. That's why, you know, the problem with the practical is the first step, which is you just do. Now, what does it mean to forgive? Let's talk a little bit about what forgiveness is. What if my spouse is not asking for forgiveness? What if my spouse isn't even aware that they hurt me? See, this is also one of the problems of making space for someone who is other than myself, which is I believe that my wife has mental telepathy. And surely she knows what I'm thinking. Surely she knows how she hurt me. Surely she knows how those kinds of words push buttons in my past. But you know what? Surely is a name of a girl. But not a good way to build a relationship. There's nothing surely. These assumptions are which very often destroy relationships. So very often, our spouse doesn't even know that they hurt us. And had they even had the inkling of a thought that they would have any way hurt our feelings, they would certainly never have said that. But we assume, of course they know. How can they not know? And the important step in creating space for otherness is they are not you. And because two people become so close to each other, it's easy to begin to think that we are really one and one and the same, and that there's some kind of mental telepathy going on, and you know what I'm thinking, and I know what you're thinking, because of course we're one soul and two bodies. How could we not know? So in the story of forgiveness, the first thing we need to exact or clarify is, does the person really know that they hurt me? Right? Do they understand the extent of the hurt? You see, hurt is a very subjective thing. And what hurts you doesn't hurt necessarily other people. You know? And I've experienced that in my own life. It's just part of the maturing process to be able to realize that, you know, I once shared with a friend in confidence something that had happened that I was hurt by. And his response was, oh, these things just roll off my back. Now I was really insulted by him. His lack of empathy, you know, was hurtful. But he didn't intend to hurt me because that's exactly who he is. These things just roll off his back, but they don't roll off my back. And people are just different. You know, just absolutely different. And so he really couldn't hear how it was that I was pained by what this person did. And of course, I was talking to this person looking for advice to fix. I wasn't doing it for the sake of gossip. And I could see he just couldn't get it. He just doesn't get it. So that's okay. But we have a tendency to have such, again, expectations, and we forget how other, this spouse is my significant other. They are significant, and they are significantly other than me. And therefore, do they really know that they hurt me? And did they really intend to hurt me? And if they did intend to hurt me, well, how can I, rather than hurt them back, rather than get into some reactive place, which certainly won't solve the problem, how do I help them understand that they hurt me? And I don't want them to understand that they hurt me because I want them to feel bad, because that's just, you know, revenge. I'm not trying to make them feel bad. I'm trying to do this for both of us so that our relationship will grow and thrive, and love will prevail in our home. So I need to look at this person and realize that they aren't bad, they're wounded. It's not, people are bad, they're just simply wounded. And so try and find the compassion in your heart for how is it that such a person could do such a thing. It could only be that there's something sadly, you know, hurt within them. That in their woundedness, this is the way they behave. This is the language they've learnt through their lives in poor communication, and how they want to get what they want or what they think they need to express, but they are wounded. So before you can begin to even get to the forgiveness, if the person isn't aware that they did something, how do you make them aware of that? But it being in a loving, nurturing, productive way, rather than a way that only makes it worse. You don't love me. How could you do this to me? Then they get into reactive mode themselves. They get into defensive mode themselves. And then you don't win. Right? Because win is only win-win. Right? And so did they know that they hurt you? And if they really, and are you sure that they know? And maybe even if you're sure that they know, and you're sure that they know that you know, how are you sure? Right? It says in the Talmud, don't judge your friend until you're in their place. And nobody can be in their place. I didn't grow up with his parents. I didn't grow up with his physical challenges. I didn't grow up with his sister. So, you know, what do I know? This is, you know, unfortunately, it's never unfortunate that God has a reason for all the characters in our, on our stage with us. It's all a growing process to offer us the opportunity for even greater love. So, you know, so we try in a very gentle way to communicate our pain. Perhaps, I'm sure you did not intend this. But I want to share with you how I'm feeling, with the hopes that together we can work through these feelings and really move forward and upward in our lives. You know, finding the right words to communicate the hurt without trying to hurt and without trying to punish, without being judgmental or presumptuous, but just really from a heartful place, sharing with the purest intentions to come back to love. The Talmud teaches something very important. It says, just as we have a mitzvah, a command, to say words that can be heard, we also have a command not to say words that cannot be heard. In other words, you need to make a very difficult decision. Will this person hear your constructive advice?
Right.
Will you know how to present it in a way that they will hear it? If not, then don't give the constructive advice, because they won't hear it, and it could only make things worse. So, of course, I mean, your significant other, my wife, is my greatest mentor and my greatest critic. And I don't say it in a bad way, but she knows me. In fact, she's the only one that really, really knows me. And she has the ability to point out what I can't see, and I hopefully have the ability to do that for her. And not that I love it, but I know I need it. And so when you build that kind of trust over time, and you know that your spouse is not trying to hurt you, that it's all and only coming from a place of love, for the purpose of love, with your best interest at heart. Well, so then, you know, so then hopefully the other will hear it. If they can't hear it, then don't say it. And try and create even more loving space with great, great patience for the time when they will hear it. There is a teaching in the Talmud that says that when a person is drunk, you can't talk to them. Right? Now that seems like obvious, but people are drunk in their negative behavior. They're in an intoxicated state, and they're just not able to hear you. So then don't say it, especially because A, it could fire up some negative stuff, or B, because they won't hear it, and then the next time when they really could hear it, they won't hear it because they'll say, oh, I heard that already.
Mm-hmm.
So it really is a tremendous art. Love is an art. It's not a science. You know, art has very basic principles, and art definitely has skills, and there's definitely rules to the aesthetics, but there's still a certain spontaneity. There's a certain give that happens in the artistic experience, where you've got to develop an intuition that navigates with and coordinates with basic principles that are fundamental to the artistic experience. So, it's a skill. Love is a skill. It's something that needs to be learnt, understood, and then practiced.
This presentation by Rabbi David Aaron has been brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To access additional presentations from our online media library, order our best-selling books, or learn more about Israelite programming, including seminars, web-based learning, teleconferences, spiritual retreats, Shabbaton experiences, Israel missions, and leadership training, please visit us at www.israelite.org. That's www.israelight.org. You can also call us in New York at 212-947-4990, or in Jerusalem at country code 972-2-627-4890. We hope you enjoyed this presentation, and we look forward to learning with you at Israelite.